On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar, your trusted midday news bulletin right here on Eagle FM. I am your host Ndafa Happy Juju, bringing you today's top stories. It's Thursday, May the 15th of 2025, and you're tuned into our second bulletin of the day, broadcasting live from 1300 hours to 1430 every Monday to Friday. Now, as always, we are here to bring you the latest headlines, in-depth reporting, and expert analysis with commentary as well, to keep you informed and well ahead of the news bulletin. Now, the top headlines for this Thursday afternoon are as follows. The Namibia Competition Commission has approved Pepstore's acquisition of Big Daddy Clothing in a deal aimed at job preservation and local supplier support. A pride of lions, previously relocated by the Ministry of Environment, has made its way back to Ngonga Village in the Zambezi region, sparking renewed fears of human-wildlife conflict. Minister Inges Zamikamwi hails the report. Now, wherever you are, on the road or at your desk or taking a well-deserved break, do stay with us. This is On The Radar, your news, your voice, and your perspective. And also do remember, you can be part of the story as well. So call us in studio on 083-288-401 to share your thoughts and questions or to react to the headlines making waves today. Now, let's get right into our news bulletin. The Namibia Competition Commission, NACC, has approved two major measures that mark a strategic transformation in the country's retail and financial service sectors. Pepstore Namibia has acquired Big Daddy Clothing, while JD Financial Services had taken over OK Furniture from OK Bazaars. Now, Pepstore Namibia, a subsidiary of South Africa-based Pepco Holdings Ltd., has finalized its acquisition of Audacity Clothing Namibia, the parent company of Big Daddy Clothing. Now, with 24 stores across the country, Big Daddy has built a reputation in the affordable adult fashion sector. This move is seen as part of Pepco's strategic pivotal to strengthen its presence in adult apparel, complementing its existing dominance in children's clothing. The NACC deemed the horizontal merger unlikely to lessen competition significantly, noting that it could, in fact, promote greater market efficiency and consumer choice. The deal also signals a commitment to preserving jobs and supporting, So what does this merger mean? Pepstore, being a South African company, produces items that are used in Namibia's everyday household, and we don't see local companies supplying them with local Namibian products. Now, who might be responsible to approach Pep to look at local companies? Let's look at some of those factors with economist Dr. Umuka Koyamata. Good afternoon, Dr. Umuka Koyamata, and welcome to On The Radar News Bulletin.
Good morning, Happy, and good morning to your listeners.
So the Namibia Competition Commission has approved two measures, one of them being Pepstore Namibia is set to acquire 24 Big Daddy Clothing. Now, I want us to first start off with Pepstore's acquiring Big Daddy Clothing. What does this measure probably mean? And 24 stores, Dr. Omu, as an economist, what would you say?
Yes. Happy, you see, whenever two companies want to merge, that is to become one, or one taking over the other, they basically, upon a certain threshold, notify or the Namibian Competition Commission, whereupon the Namibian Competition Commission do a serious due diligence, look at different, depending on what is in that application, look at employment implications, mm-hmm. look at the competition in the market, because the Competition Commission is there to protect competition. What it means is that the merger should not lessen competition, because when there is few companies that are in that particular market, be it retail or financial or so, then they can easily dominate the market, meaning that they can charge higher prices, and that could be very bad for the consumers as well as for the economy. So without competition is good, because competition leads to innovation, it leads to lower prices and the like. Mm-hmm. So for them to reach at that point where they are saying, yes, we are going to allow this merger to proceed, is that they are satisfied with not lessening competition, not serious employment implications. But mind you, when we are still at employment, the restructuring and merging of those companies could lead to some layoffs or some retrenchments and the like. But we are not privy yet to that information. But I think maybe there won't be serious ones unless they are going to close some, as I'm saying, restructuring, closing some of the 24 or so branches of Big Daddy. So now the other consideration is, if a company is really struggling, and it is, let's say Big Daddy is going to close all branches, it's better for you to allow the merger for them to proceed with running those branches, rather than just saying no to the measure, and then your people are going to lose jobs just because that other company is wrapping up, either going into liquidation, meaning that they are no more having that money to go ahead. So those are some of the implications. So I think that is not a very bad idea, although we are saying merger sometimes can lead to lesser competition in the market, and that could allow those companies to charge higher prices.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can regulators ensure that mergers do fulfill their promises to preserve jobs and support local suppliers?
Yes, I think when it comes to jobs, it is not in the act as such, but it's a consideration that the Competition Commission is also paying attention to. So what they will do after the measure has been approved, there is some checks on those companies, meaning that they don't leave them just like so. They will check whether they are complying with the terms of the merger. In that sense, the regulator, which is the Namibian Competition Commission, is how they try to safeguard jobs and the other things that those companies said they are going to do.
Interesting. Now, in terms of local suppliers, PAP is a South African-based company, which doesn't actually make any room for Namibian suppliers to, in terms of stock. Everything comes from South Africa, even some of the things that could actually be done here. In terms of this measures, do you perhaps think that they might look into stuff like that? And who would you say is responsible to actually ensure or to try and convince PAP to kind of make use of Namibian local suppliers?
Look, the problem that we have is that we have very few. These are retail companies in clothing.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at Namibia, for instance, we have one major supplier, which is Dina Pama, which is in a certain, section, that is supplying uniforms to companies, that is those kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't think we have that capacity, but your question is crucial in terms of what we are saying, that we should try, even under our president, Dr. Netumbo Ndaitwah, where he is saying, we have to grow, that is the old growth at home strategy. We have to grow our own manufacturing sector.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is upon government to try and see how they can create national champions by really supporting guys like Dina Palmer to grow so that they can show what they can do. When they are going to go to PEP and negotiate with them and say, look, we have this to supply. Now, you want to supply, but when PEP say, show us the money or the goods, we don't have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think government should play a bigger role in trying to support these guys to grow so that we can locally supply those retail shops from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, we'll keep on exporting jobs, meaning that we are supporting those in South Africa who are manufacturing those clothing, and we are just consumers buying. And one day, if we go by this, then one day, all our money will be shipped to South Africa where we get the things from.
Yes.
And we are going to be poorer and poorer, left with no money.
Mm-hmm.
But if we grow the Dina Palmers and the other clothing companies here, we have few besides Dina Palmer, then we can start supplying them locally.
Interesting. How wonderful it would be to have Namibian suppliers supplying actually some of these big stores, like retailers of PEP from South Africa, and perhaps even those goods could actually be sold in South Africa itself.
Very much so. Because, Happy, you are very right. What we are trying to do now under the African Continental Free Trade Area is also to export to other African countries under this duty-free regime. So if we don't have anything to sell, what will be the African Continental Free Trade Area mean to us? We are just going to be here naked and just importing things from even other African countries besides South Africa. So it is time for us as a country to try and see how we can support local manufacturing. You remember the other time where President Ramaphosa, when he came for the SONA, their SONA, where he said, the suit and the tie and everything that I have on me is made here locally in South Africa. So for Namibia, we should also push for that and be proud to put on our own clothes.
Our own
as
products.
Well as to, yes, our own products, as well as to export them and create jobs. That unemployment rate that we are now facing, it is people are desperate. People are sad.
Yeah. Dr. Omu, while we are still talking about this, I'm of the impression that South Africa really boosts its people to produce something. A lot of stuff that we have on the shelves are actually made in South Africa. I don't really see Namibia government or Namibia itself pushing its people to produce locally made stuff to benefit us, the Namibian people.
No, it can, and it has tried. The problem is our small market. Companies that are trying, be it local jam, honey, whatever, the scale is so small that your cost is very high. Your prices are going to be very high, and you are not competing. You won't be able to compete against South African products where they have huge scale and lower prices.
I see.
If there are two products on a Namibian one and a South African one, and the South African one, the price is low. A hard-pressed consumer, of course, you'll buy the South African one where the prices are low. If we can support big time, that is government, either through some subsidies on energy, or that is electricity or water or something, or skills, to boost our local production for exports, not only for local consumption,
mm-hmm.
then look for markets for our people. And if we can do that, as I have said, maybe in, under the African Continental Free Trade Area, then we are going to have that scale. Our prices will come down and we are going to be competitive and we are going to employ more people as we are opening more and more factories.
Indeed. Dr. Amu, thank you so much for always breaking down economical news for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you, Happy, and thank you to your listeners. Bye.
Okay, bye. So could we one day walk into the retail shop and find local products by Namibians for Namibians, and who is responsible for bringing such talks on the table with the huge South African retailers? Well, let's now engage Salomo Haidula, who's the Deputy Director at the Ministry of Trade and Industry Relations on this. Good afternoon, Mr. Salomo.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Thank you for having me.
Mm. Now, PEP has been given power to dominate the fashion retail. Thus far, the retail giants stock no Namibian clothing brands. Can the NACC perhaps include conditions for PEP, or since the conditions have been, the deal has already been done, but for future deals, to perhaps to include certain conditions such as to sell local brands as part of their deals?
No, thank you. Thank you once again for having me. I think as you have rightly pointed out, the merger has been approved by the Competition Commission.
Mm-hmm.
At this stage, as a ministry, even though the commission reports or resides under the ministry,
mm-hmm.
we are not privy to the conditions of the merger.
Mm-hmm.
So we, at this stage, we do not know what are the conditions, because normally when a merger is approved, there are some conditions.
Yeah.
So in terms of the one that you have now mentioned, we are not sure whether it's part of the conditions or not, but if that condition is not part of the merger conditions,
mm-hmm.
at this stage it would be late.
Yeah.
That's now on the part of the commission to include it.
Okay.
However, the Competition Act also provides for a party to the merger if they are not satisfied with the decision of the commission,
mm-hmm.
they may lodge a review application to the minister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ideally,
I think what we aspire as a responsible government is obviously market access for our locally produced goods.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Salomo, since the Namibia Competition Commission falls under the Ministry of Trade and Industrial Relations, could the ministry perhaps look into these factors now moving forward to say any merger or perhaps any company that wants to trade or to operate within Namibia include some of these things? Of course, maybe we can start off small to say, okay, for the next 3 years at least, we would love to see perhaps even 5% of locally produced items on your shelves.
No, thank you. Thank you for the question. Just a slight point of correction before I answer.
Mm-hmm.
Since the dissolution of what we formerly used to know as the Ministry of Industrialization and Trade, so the ministry is now Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank
then
you.
The trade component is now under Ministry of International Relations and Trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you. You are asking a very, 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 very good question. I think the issue is we have to tread carefully, because the Competition Commission has an enabling act, and that's the act that created them and it gives them certain powers.
Yeah.
So we do not want to run the risk as a ministry to go into the day-to-day operations of the commission, because this is an independent body,
mm-hmm.
and with management and a board of directors. And I think that's why Parliament saw it fit to include a review mm-hmm. mechanism to say if there is a party to a merger that feels wronged by the decision of the commission, they may then approach the Honorable Minister to review that decision. But I think on your point of the locally produced goods and, if I may use the word, space on the shelf.
Yeah.
I think that's very key. And as a ministry, we have come up with some initiatives and policies that are aimed at ensuring that our locally produced goods,
mm-hmm.
yeah, get onto the shelves. That's why we have a growth at home strategy, buy local, grow local. But perhaps we can perhaps say that we can do more,
mm-hmm.
so that we can then empower our local entrepreneurs so that they can have that access,
yeah,
as well. Yes, okay. but it might be an entirely different story to already make it a condition,
mm-hmm.
even before the Competition Commission has set on a merger. It might be seen as interfering in the work of the commission.
Mm, that is well understood. Now, hypothetically speaking, let's say come next year, Namibians can now produce their products to be on this huge retailers' shelves. Who then, or as a ministry, how do we ensure that Namibian local suppliers meet the target demands for such huge retail markets? Because we wouldn't want them to penetrate, and all of a sudden they are falling out.
Yeah. No, thank you. You are asking very good and relevant questions. I think what probably as a ministry, what we need to do is to educate our local entrepreneurs in terms of the policies that are already there,
mm-hmm.
that aim to assist our local entrepreneurs. And perhaps through such engagements, if there are shortcomings with regards to those policies,
yeah.
we can then work together as a ministry, together with those that are intended to benefit
mm-hmm.
from these policies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the issue is you do not want to engage a big retailer and then 3 months down the line you are unable to meet the demand.
Mm.
And I think that should be the starting point when it comes to empowering our local entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we just have to because as I said, there are already some policies that are in place.
Yeah.
But policies, and this is a song that we normally sing, not only in Namibia, but in Africa, to say we have policies, but do we implement these policies?
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps there is a need to create awareness on existing policies,
mm-hmm.
identify gaps within those policies, and whether those policies, are they sufficient to meet the demands of the local entrepreneurs in today's dynamic world,
mm.
or do we entirely need to scrap what we already have and then start perhaps working on policies that are more current, that can address the challenges that our local entrepreneurs are faced with.
Mm. Okay. And now before I do let you go, Mr. Salomo, I want to find out who is responsible to actually bring such discussions on the table with the big boys. We're talking about huge retailers, South African retailers.
Uh-huh. Now, the starting point should be our ministry.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Ministry of Industry, Mines and Energy.
Yeah.
But obviously there are other stakeholders that are key. You have our NCCI, Namibia Chamber of Commerce and Industry. We have the NALOBAS that has been established.
Mm-hmm.
So those are also key stakeholders that need to come on board, as well as other different offices, ministries, and and agencies. Yeah. One of them obviously also being the Competition Commission.
Absolutely.
When we are talking about issues of around mergers and acquisitions.
Mm.
Yes.
Wonderful. Mr. Salomo, we would love to hear such engagements actually, that even where local entrepreneurs have been invited, and the media also, to attend such events where discussions like this have been being put on the table to move forward. And perhaps, like you said, if those policies need to be scrapped away and new ones started, then so be it. But we look forward to such engagements.
No, thank you. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for making time.
All right.
Okay.
We'll be right back after the break with more on today's top stories, including reactions from Gonga residents and expert insight into Namibia's new FDI strategy. This is on the Reader News Bulletin. Your opinion and contributions, as well as questions, are more than welcome. Dial in. Studio number is 083-288-401.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back, and we continue with our news. The Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, Inge Zamani Kamwe, has hailed the launch of Namibia's inaugural Foreign Direct Investment Report, also known as FDI, as a landmark in the country's economic transformation journey. Now, speaking at the event, the minister highlighted the report as a crucial tool for evidence-based policymaking, economic diplomacy and investor engagement, produced in collaboration between the Bank of Namibia and the Namibia Investment Promotion Development Board, NIPDB. The report outlines trends, opportunities, and challenges in Namibia's investment landscape. The minister emphasized that FDI must go beyond capital inflows and serve as a transformative force for job creation, enterprise growth, and innovation. She aligned the investment vision with the Swapo Party's manifesto, which prioritizes industrialization, investment-led growth, and inclusive development. Now, over the past 4 years, Namibia has attracted $114.9 billion Namibian dollars in net FDI investment, with $58 billion Namibian dollars directed to sectors outside oil and gas. Now, this surge reflects increase in global investor confidence, supported by Namibia's political stability, good governance, and strategic geographical positioning. Now, despite progress, the minister expressed concern that 70% of current FDI is still concentrated in capital-intensive, resource-focused industries that generated limited employment. She identified new priority sectors being tourism and hospitality, agribusiness and agro-processing, digital and creative economy, light manufacturing, logistics, and this area, she said, offer higher potential for job creation, skills development, and long-term sustainability. She also spoke about removing investment barriers. The minister called for urgent reform to address persistent obstacles to investment, which include delays in land access and permits, and unfinalized policies, gaps between skills development and investor needs. She said, we must act with urgency and unity if we are to remain competitive in a fast-changing global economy. Namibia's global investment narrative, Inge Zamani Kamwe, affirmed her ministry's commitment to economic diplomacy, working with the NDPDB and foreign missions to amplify Namibia's story as an investment-ready, reliable, and resilient economy, especially within the context of the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, speaking at the launch as well is the CEO of NIPDB, Nangula Wanja, and she had this to say in regards to foreign direct investment.
So at NIPDB, we don't start anything without looking at it, because this is the reason for our existence. We are government's arm to working with the private sector to see how can we make sure that the private sector supports government in solving the challenges that are facing us. And the government has said from the budget point of view, one way we need to grow our economy in an inclusive manner. We can grow it through public especially personal consumption. We have got challenges because our unemployment rate is high. Those that are employed are earning low salaries, and therefore it's a challenge. Number two, especially when we started around about 2015, we had significant fiscal space and we are undergoing consolidation. So yes, while the budget of government can be used as a lever to grow the economy, that lever, if you use it without actually growing the economy, it's not sustainable. And therefore, then the formula was we need to increase investments, whether they are direct, foreign direct, or local investment. We need to increase investment with a focus on how can those investments also enable us to export. Because if we grow investment, but we continue to import more than we are exporting, we are still going to be in trouble. So then we say, therefore, it's important to have the private sector play a role. Private sector investment contribute significantly to economic development. And therefore, we need a board that will help reach out to the private sector and be government agency to ramp up private sector investment, whether it's from a development point of view, from attraction point of view, to make sure that government can support private sector development in creating jobs. So the private sector has got a significant role to play, but without government support, that role cannot happen. So now we also need to know, if we want the private sector to play a role, in which sectors do we want them? What we have seen is especially between 2000 and 2014, when our economy was growing well, mostly activities were happening in the extractive sectors. So if we continue in extractive sectors, the trickle down it could be a bit of a challenge. Why? I think the executive director at MERT, when she was still a deputy ED, do you remember the two of us sat when we started and we were looking at investment in Namibia and how much it took to create one job? It was something like 20 something million it took to create one job. So when we invest in the extractive sector, it takes too much money to create one job. But when we invest in other sector like agriculture, a few million, or even if you can look at some of the projects that we are looking at, we say when they invest 1 billion, then we have got about 1,000 permanent jobs and about 7,000 seasonal jobs. If you put that same amount in an energy project or in a mining project, so if we talk about, we are talking about Osino and how many jobs it can create, the investment is about 4 or 5 or some billion, and then it will create 1,000 jobs, and that is probably including contracts and so on. So it's important to say, which sectors do we want? Yes, it does not mean that we are not supporting the other sectors, because they are actually also great enablers, but we also need to be deliberate about other sectors. So those are the sectors we ended up with. Quickly on NIPDB, we have got two mandates, investment development promotion and facilitation and MSME development. That is private sector. And guess what? MSMEs are also investors. Many times we think MSMEs are MSMEs. MSMEs are investors. They are just small investors that we want to grow into big investors. And if we are not deliberate about supporting to grow them into big investors, we have a challenge. So yes, we look after MSMEs for two reasons. Number one, they are small investors. Number two, if you have got big investors and there are no small investors to plug into, then that benefit of the big investment will not trickle down to the economy. You will not have as many jobs as you can get, because the real employment creator are MSMEs. So the role that we play, we say first, let's look at the role of FDI, and I'm not going to talk a lot about that one because the governor has spoken about why do we need FDI. So we're talking about investment, and I wanted to put a caveat here. Why are we talking about FDI? Total investment information, unfortunately, is not readily available. How we got lucky with getting FDI is because the management of FDI, or I don't know what is the right word to use, is really FDI flow is managed at Bank of Namibia. So Bank of Namibia tracks which money is coming and leaving Namibia. And because of that, we have gotten the data. But everything else that is happening in the ecosystem outside of FDI, we don't have it. And that is why the report is one-sided to FDI. We would definitely like to see a report that is complete. And yes, at NIPDB, we are trying to bring together as much data as we can about who are the investors. Please register with us so that we can see what the total economy looks like, but that will take time. So from a FDI point of view, why do we need FDI? Job creation, local supply chain, import substitution, technology absorption, productivity gains, regional development, the list goes on. I think the main thing that I'm missing there, which is one of the most important, is market access. That is definitely, I think the deputy governor has talked about it. Yes, what do we do? Investment, we do three things. Number one, we attract. So in the attraction phase, we promote a lot. Tell people, Namibia, 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 Namibia. That's what we do. And they say, okay, fine. Namibia, where is the project? So we develop project also. And then when the projects are there, we say, we bolster them. We now tell government, there is this project. They have now come to Namibia. They can add value to our economy. So we kind of speak for those projects so that government can receive them and support them. And then we connect them. What does connection mean? Connection means there is MSMEs. There are individual Namibians that need employment. They are service providers. So we need to make sure that when the investor comes, they can be connected to the ecosystem of Namibia. So in summary, those are the phases that one is at attraction, bolster, connection. And then what we do, we promote, we facilitate, and we do policy advocacy.
And now we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. But when we do return, we'll be bringing you yet more stories. Now, our studio line is very much open. You're also welcome to partake in the news bulletin. Studio number is 083-288-401.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Welcome back. The Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism has confirmed the return of a pride of lions to the Ngonga area in the Zambezi region just days after being relocated to Gwalawata National Park. Now the pride, which includes two adult lioness and four cubs, was moved on May 9 as part of the efforts to reduce human-wildlife conflict in the area. However, on the night of May 13, the lions returned to Ngonga after crossing the B8 road near Kwado Gate. Now, residents have voiced growing fears following the return despite early efforts by the ministry and the Kwado Carnivore Project to protect livestock. This included wrapping kraals in plastic to block lion sidelines and fitting one lioness with a trekking collar for early warnings. The ministry says a second relocation is now being planned. This time, the lions will be moved deeper into Mwabata National Park to the Omega-3 area to reduce the chances of them coming back. Officials stress that killing the lions is the last resort, and they remain committed to balancing public safety with wildlife conservation. Now, plans are also underway to station wildlife personnel in the area for closer monitoring and community support. Let's now speak to Mr. Levity Muyoba, who's the control warden at Wildlife and National Park in Zambezi region. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Mm.
Yes.
Indeed. Yeah, sorry. So what are the main reasons that lions do return to areas where they have been relocated from, such as the Ongonga area?
Well, thank you very much, ma'am, for the question. But maybe let me start by saying few parameters or incidences where that can lead maybe to lions or a pride of lions or prey that have been transferred or translocated from a place, being returning to the same place. Point number one is either, for example, it's a proximity of the area where the animals were translocated to, meaning that maybe, for example, I say the lions maybe were moved from Ngonga area and then they were taken maybe in Mudumu National Park, which is a park which is unfenced and within the same habitat area with Ngonga. And also the second one might be, for example, in this regard, we looked at those parameters of, say, if we take them from Ngonga area and take them to Mutumu, they can easily come back. So we look at other parameters or other features that maybe can bury or stop these animals coming back to the translocated area, for example, in Ngonga. So then we opted for Bobata National Park. So in this regard, we're looking at that Babata National Park on its eastern boundary, it's bordered by the Kwandu River. So which makes it difficult, easier if you take them in Babata, and then it's difficult for them to cross the rivers because we are aware that lions are not water lovers. So they tend to avoid crossing the rivers, or the most especially the water levels are high. But to answer the question in this regard, we are dealing with a pride of 9 lions, meaning 9 lions, it involves or includes 3 adult females and 6 cubs. So during our attempt to remove this pride out, we managed only to that and capture and translocate 6 lions, as it's indicated in the brief.
Yeah.
So these 6 lions, 2 were adult female and 4 were cubs. So meaning remaining 3, there was an adult female and 2 cubs.
Okay. While you're still there, sorry, Mr. Levity, just a scheduled commercial break, but we'll resume right after. Just stay by the line.
Okay.
Onkuntana ombanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele owuna osheenditho. Owuna aaniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa, ashike mboka yena oondjo dhoye otaye ende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye, eto pewa epresenda 45% dhongushu yoshiyenditho shoye. Muule ashike, wemuntetilo 45%. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa ethimbo weshipumbwa. Tu dhengela nena ko 061 ne 00 5 7 6. Ano ko 061 ne 00 5 7 6. Oshipulela ko AutoCash.
Okay, let's now resume that conversation with Levity Muyoba, who is the control warden of wildlife in National Park at Zambezi region. Yes, you're busy telling us about the number of lions and what type of lions they were?
Yes, thank you very much, ma'am. Yes, so the number that I said indicated, there was 9, the total pride lion number that is outside the Ngonga area, there are 9, meaning 3 adult female and 6 cubs. So during our attempt of translocating the whole pride, we only managed to locate and that 6, of which 2 were adult female and 3 were, 4 were cubs. So once you take them out there, the reason for us, them coming back, because we assume that one of the adult female, the two cubs that remained outside, they are her babies.
Uh-huh.
So that now prompted the lion, the nurse, meaning female lion, to try and see how do we go about going back and finding the others that are missing from our group, because as much as they are wild animals, they also know how many are we in our group. If one is missing, they'll know that one is missing. But this time here, we are looking at two cubs that remained outside, presumably belong to one of the female adult cubs, lions that we took in Babata.
Mm-hmm.
So we attempted to take them as far as they about from Ngonga to where we dropped them is about 30, 40 kilometers towards the Angola border. But from the look of the thing, I think basically based on that understanding that the lionesses missed the two cubs, now they were like trying to find out exactly where do we go about looking for this missing cub. So the collar system that were deployed on them showed that they started walking backwards.
Yeah.
From the offload area, and then by the evening of the 13th, meaning that was 2 days or 3 days ago, 2 days ago, it seems like they were approaching the B8 road, the one that comes from Rundu to Katima.
Mm-hmm.
So with that now, we of the opinion that maybe they could have crossed over the B8 road and then maybe go to the swamps on the southern part of the road. But to our surprise, they just followed from there. They followed because they are just less than 1 kilometer to the Kwandu gate, where the checkpoint for the police is.
Mm-hmm.
They followed that tarmac, the B8 road, and then they crossed right through the Kwandu gate, and then they went southward and then going straight to Ngonga. So the system now at early morning hours of yesterday, it indicates that the lions are back at Ngonga. So, but definitely the main reasons for them coming back for this specific assignment, definitely it also includes the issue of the two cubs that were left behind and then the mother was looking for them.
Mm. Now, I understand that one of the lions or one of the female lions has a tracking collar. So what role do tracking collars play in wildlife monitoring and how reliable are they in preventing attacks?
No, the main aim of putting collars, either be it cats or be it predators or be it any other animals.
Yeah.
Number one is to monitor their movement and understand exactly where they are. For example, it depends whether it's seasonal or whether it's quarterly, you name it. But in this regard, when we call out the one of the female lioness, the main aim was because the animals were still outside the communal or outside the parks in communal area where they caused this cattle attack, most especially, I think, the whole of April. So the idea of collaring them when the report was received, we involved the Kwandu Carnival Project people, was for us to understand their movement of the pride, number one. Number two, it assisted us also and it assists the people that are sort of like monitoring them, at least to warn the farmers in that area of Ngonga, for example, saying that no, at this moment in time, because the collar will indicate exactly whether the lion that is collared is standing in terms of the position on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to inform, for example, village A, you inform somebody there whether it's an area in Duna or a person that is well known maybe from the conservation, say no, inform the communities of that village A that this pride of lions, they are just, you can even determine the distance away from the village. You can say maybe they are 500 meters away from you. Please, please let the cattle owners or farmers to inform their herders that no, maybe for now, while we are still looking at other modalities, can they maybe either not graze this animal from once this side where the lions are, maybe they do go to the other side where there's no lions. So that is a main reason for collaring these animals in terms of just, it's like early warning system that somebody can inform the people within the areas that these animals are moving from this direction to that direction, or they are at what area, at what time.
I see. Now, how can communities be better supported during periods of heightened wildlife presence, such as this one?
Yeah, no, in terms of this one, definitely the ministry, as a ministry, we feel and we acknowledge the concern of the Ngonga community because of the presence of these lions, because we all know that when wild animals like lions, be it elephant, you name them, that they are regarded as dangerous animals, are roaming or are found in proximity with people. They create that fear, there's that danger of maybe they can cause anything that is unforeseen. So now, the issue that the ministry that is, we are planning to try and do another attempt again to try to see if we can relocate these animals, meaning this time looking at trying to get all the nine. And then if we get all the nine and then we move them away, and then at least we save the purpose. But in the meantime, also we are looking at maybe possibilities, because it's a pride of 3 female lions and 6 cubs. So which means that this females are pressured to get food for the 3 young or for the 6 young ones.
Mm.
So meaning that's why now they are doing now, they are causing this livestock hammering or killing. So at the end of the day, the idea, other maybe option, while we are still looking at how to remove this process of trying to attempt to take them out again, maybe either look at like whenever we are betting them or want to translocate them, we always maybe through formal structures, we request maybe for a bait, an animal, a wild animal that we put, and then we lure them there. Maybe ideally, while we are still planning for the time to see when can we best translocate, try to retranslocate them again,
mm-hmm.
is either maybe looking at possibility of getting permission to maybe either, we know where they are using the collar. Maybe we get a carcass or we hunt a zebra, and then we bring that zebra closer to the areas where those animals are, so that at least they can feed on that carcass. Nearly, if it takes at 2-3 days, so if we know that they need to eat every day, so it, maybe the ministry will look at that possibility of saying, let's try to feed them so that they don't resort to cattle. At the same time, also, we are looking at deploying staff members from the ministry. Mm-hmm. Even though it's difficult, the area where these animals are roaming is bushy, so it's not aligned like in the open area where you, like, you are supervising them in the open, you can see them. So this time in the area in the bushy, but we want to maybe deploy some staff member to see if you can keep using that collar line system, and then say, okay, if we are to, we are seeing that they are in village A.
Yeah.
Maybe the staff member can go just be in within that area and then try to protect the livestock within that certain area as they move until we find the solution of try to move them again for the second time to the park.
Okay. We should hope that you will be absolutely successful with that operation, so that the Gonga residents are out of fear and worries in regards to these lions.
Definitely, we hope to do that. Definitely, I think that will be maybe ideal for us. I think also to make sure that at least communities live in that a space where they don't fear that, no, I can't visit my family mm-hmm. because of A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you so much, sir, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Bulletin.
No, thank you very, very much, ma'am, for having me also on air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And like I said, you can also partake in the News Bulletin right here on the Reader. Our studio number is 083-288-401. Now we go to visit the marketplace. When we do return, we will be bringing you what's happening lately in regards to today's economic indicators.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back, and now what's making headlines in today's economic indicators. Now we start off with agricultural commodities, with the top commodity losers being cheese at minus 5.23% and canola at minus 2.53%. Now sugar is at minus 1.14% and gains are led by palm oil at 1.22%, with wheat at 0.52%. On metal commodities, the top commodity losers are gold at minus 1.35% and copper at minus 1.34% and silver at minus 1.28%. Energy commodities has the biggest commodity loser being crude oil, WTI, at minus 3.07% and Brent crude oil at minus 2.19% and gasoline at minus 1.47%. Now gains in the energy commodity are led by natural gas, UK, GBP at 1.40% and natural gas EU Dutch at 1.35%. Now mining production in South Africa has shrank by 2.8% over a year ago. In March 2025, following a 9.7% plunge in the prior month. The latest reading pointed to the fifth consecutive month of downturn in the country's sector, although much softer than in February, as output fell less for PGMs at minus 9.9% versus 24.3% in February. Now, building materials came in at minus 8.7% versus minus 11.8% and nickel at minus 0.3% versus minus 2.1%. Meanwhile, production rebounded for iron ore at 7.5% versus minus 10.7%. Chromium ore at 5.4% versus negative 5.3%. Diamonds are at 1.4% versus minus 12.7%. Coal is at 0.8% versus minus 4.3%, and other non-metallic minerals at 0.7% versus minus 4.2%. Now, on a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, mining output rose 3.5% in March after a revised 4.1% decline in the previous month. Mining production dropped by 4.5% in the first quarter of 2025 compared with the fourth quarter of 2024. Meanwhile, Poland's economy expanded by 3.2% year-on-year in the first quarter of 2025, slightly below the revised 3.4% growth recorded in the previous quarter. According to a preliminary estimate, annual growth has remained around 3% for four consecutive quarters, signaling resilient economic momentum despite global uncertainty. Now, with that being said, we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be bringing you news beyond the borders. To stay with us.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before.
We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Owuli omunangeshefa nowahala kushivika omayakulo yoye okupitila mohulike radio station yoye yo Eagle FM enyamukulo olongaha ningi kwatafano na Monica koshikondo shoipindi konora 081-741-4716 that is 081-741-4716 mombelewa konora 83-83-4-3 ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the border. We start off regionally, then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, we bring you some international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where the unemployment in South Africa has reached a crisis level.
Rate and the practical steps that can be taken to fight it. We're now joined by former statistician general, Dr. Badi Lehotla. Very good evening to you. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Lehotla. I mean, as we listen to one part of the country, the Northwest, the labor market picture there has become bleaker. We're hearing of residents who are saying things are simply getting out of hand. They cannot find work. They cannot even afford to put bread on the table. What's your take?
Well, I suppose that's a fact. They are not faking it. It's a sad reality. We've seen it coming, but we didn't take the necessary steps to combat that. We've pointed out that the core drivers of poverty and poverty in South Africa is a combination of unemployment and absence of education. We've demonstrated this by looking at the population of whites and the population of Indians. We have shown that the population of colors and the population of blacks have a different pattern. And that pattern is a consequence of lack of education. The population of Indians does show that over the last 40 years, they've been pumping highly in education. And that's why they have actually very little or low unemployment compared to that of blacks. Whites have always been privileged since the 1933 when the whites, the Afrikaner poverty was dealt with. So they have unemployment rate of about 5% in the country compared to the unemployment, expanded unemployment of 50% amongst blacks and lower than that amongst colors. So it is clear what drives unemployment. Mm. It is not a surprise that blacks have been excluded in education, but we have not taken steps to deal with the issue of education. We have shown the correlation, in fact, causality of poverty driven by a combination of unemployment, which drove poverty contributing about 33% as early as 2001. That rate increased to 40% in 2011. By 2016, that rate increased to 52%. Mm-hmm. It grew by 12 percentage points in 5 years, in half the time. It is not unsurprising, therefore, that 8 years from 2016 or nine years from 2016, we see these levels of unemployment. And of course, levels of poverty, because there have not been any improvement in the levels of education. In fact, things have been declining. The combined effect of education and unemployment troubles South Africa at the level of about 70%. Mm-hmm. Those two combined drive South African poverty, which has the face of a black person.
Dr. Lehotla, We cannot ignore the fact that South Africa, as you make mention, has suffered high employment for many years. What do these figures expose about government's macroeconomic policies and whose interests they continue to serve?
Yes, of course. I mean, Trump has just said whites are being ill-treated in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Only black political parties have objected to that. The DA has remained silent.
Mm-hmm.
In the face of this evidence that whites only have 5% unemployment, it is very, very, very hurtful when that is introduced and the DA says it likes black people. Of course, the government is stupid in introducing that because by so doing, they punish these black people who have these levels of unemployment. The question then, therefore, is the joint ANC DA, what happens to the poor? I mean, these are the questions that we have to confront.
Mm-hmm.
They have been there for too long and have been ignored for too long, despite the evidence. And the evidence, in the evidence lie the solutions. And we have presented these numbers. And since I left office, I have presented these numbers again and again and said,
mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, in Gambia, experts warn the Gambian's capital could be submerged as sea levels rise.
Capital city in the recesses of Banyul North is this small fishing settlement. Situated in a low-lying coastal area, Nangan is one of the parts of the Gambia's island capital, highly vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change, such as rising sea levels.
The situation is very stressful. Because looking at it, as I told you, during rainy season, that is the most affected time. Because that's the time the high tide affects the community and it will move towards the houses. So even to move out, I told you, is a problem. And if this is in the time of schooling days, kids will find it difficult to move out and go to school.
However, amidst the challenges, young people in this community are finding solutions. They are putting together a program to mitigate the risks of coastal flooding and other climate change-induced disasters ahead of the rainy season in June. Innovative approaches like this wooden shelter, designed to withstand erosion and coastal flooding, are being put up as part of efforts to build climate resilience.
So that is why you've seen where we have started. We have started trying to submerge the water from the root so that they can have easy access to move out, and if a vehicle is so coming, it will come easily.
However, the settlement of Nangan is unfortunately not alone. It seems every part of the city is facing increasing threats from the changing local climate. The capital, which is an island situated on the mouth of the River Gambia, faces increasing depletion amidst an encroaching sea, leaving much of it less than 1 meter above sea level.
As the Atlantic Ocean creeps closer each year, the future of Gambia's capital hangs in the balance. Experts warn that residents risk displacements and critical infrastructure could be swallowed by the sea.
Banyul has an urgent call to make when with regards to climate change. And then it is actually going on, but we have to accelerate the effort because there are scientific researches that have actually been emanated that if Banyul haven't make the right cautionary measures, Banyul can be, you know, we can lose more than 15% of our land. And that is a considerable amount of land considering the limited size of Banyul and also the important structures we have here, government institutions.
In July and August 2022, flash floods in Banyul raised red flags, unleashing the most shocking devastation in decades, recording 10 inches of rainfall in just 20 hours. These ravaged shelters displaced and affected over 50,000 people. Authorities say they are implementing adaptation measures.
Efforts include mangrove restoration and reforestation programs that aim at stabilizing shoreline and enhancing natural defense in most sensitive areas around the Banyul city. And on infrastructure and community engagement.
With worries of what another major flooding or rise in sea levels might bring, these efforts cannot come quick enough for the residents of Banyul, but also millions more families across the country who rely on the capital city as a market for their produce. Mumot Lamin Choi, CGTN, Banjul, The Gambia.
When you think of Palestine, you may think of massacres, lands.
Uganda, Rwanda, and DRC Congo launch a joint Mountain Galera census.
Are combing the wind. Survey teams are combing the windy impenetrable national park to pick samples and data for analysis. This involves following gorilla trails and locating their night nests. Dung is picked up for genetic analysis to identify individual gorillas. This way, populations can be accurately counted.
We collect samples from three consecutive night nests so that in case we had missed a particular nest, the DNA can tell us that, okay, you know, this gorilla was here, but it was not there. And that is how we shall be in position to count the number of gorillas.
Samples are also examined for any disease outbreaks which can potentially wipe out populations. The census is being funded by different conservation groups. Teams will take more than 6 months in the forest before arriving at an accurate number.
Since the last census in 2018, hundreds of births and fewer deaths have been recorded here. Now, survey teams tracking the rugged terrain here believe populations have grown, a proof of relentless conservation efforts.
The Uganda Wildlife Authority says hunting for game meat is now under control. Communities surrounding the park are now involved in conservation efforts.
The community members are staying close to the conservation areas have been given jobs. They are the ones that always maintain the forest trails. So once they come inside the forest, they maintain the trails. At the end of the day, they are given money. And through that, we've tried to control all those illegal activities.
Records show Uganda has 459 mountain gorillas in the wild, but conservationists are concerned about the impact of climate change on food, especially bamboo. Gorillas feed predominantly on bamboo shoots, and there are signs it's on a decline.
We've seen that the bamboo zone has been shrinking, partly because of climate change. The earth is warming, and therefore there's a bit of climate change. So for challenges like that, we need to be able to know and predict what the likelihood is and work with the wildlife authorities to be able to provide a conducive environment.
Windy Impenetrable National Park is home to half of the world's mountain gorillas. The other half is found on the Rwanda and DRC sides. This makes this habitat popular for gorilla trekking, boosting tourism. But protecting the gorillas and their home is also a top priority. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN, Windy Impenetrable National Park, Uganda.
Let's make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Go big this Easter with extra low prices at WB. Get a 1 kg Yum Yum Peanut Spread Tub for $59.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $74.99 with Smart Buy. 1.8 liter Farmhouse Ice Cream for a sweet $39.99. 1 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $33.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 Sheet 1-Ply Toilet Rolls for $34.99. See all our exciting Easter specials at furmanbrock.com. We care.
Nigeria's Dangote Oil Refinery has cancelled a planned 30-day maintenance shutdown of its 200,000 barrel per day gasoline producing unit originally scheduled for June.
Oil company says it's suspending land transportation to the country's west, including the capital Tripoli, due to deteriorating security conditions. The worst fighting in Libya's capital for years abated today, an hour after the government announced a ceasefire. Ever since the fall of the late leader Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, Libya has been plagued by insecurity and political instability as political rivals and armed groups compete for control over territory. Nigeria's Dangote oil refinery has cancelled June maintenance at its 200,000 barrel per day gasoline-making unit as it completed plant works during an unplanned shutdown from April 7th to May 11th. During the unplanned outage, the refinery increased exports of residual products such as straight-run fuel oil, while exports of finished products such as jet fuel and gas oil dropped, according to shipping trade analytics Bonk Player. Data shows that Nigeria's gasoline imports rose by 24% on the month in April to 157,000 barrels per day. Dangote had initially planned to shut its gasoline-making residue fluid catalytic cracking unit for 30-day maintenance in June. Tullow Oil PLC has said its unit, Tullow Gabon Limited, has agreed to sell its entire stake in Tullow Oil Gabon SA to Gabon Oil Company for $300 million in cash. The oil and gas producer said Tullow Oil Gabon holds all of its non-operated working interests in Gabon. Shares in Tullow Oil were up 14% to 15.64 pence in London on Tuesday afternoon. Tullow said the sale represents 10,000 barrels of oil per day of 2025 production guidance and around 36 million barrels of 2P reserves. And British luxury brand Burberry says it plans to cut 1,700 jobs, around a fifth of its global workforce, to cut costs as part of efforts to revive its performance, sending its shares higher. Burberry is in the early stages of a turnaround plan led by CEO Joshua Schulman, who is seeking to reverse the brand's years of underperformance versus luxury rivals. Schulman, formerly at Jimmy Choo, took over last year and shifted Burberry's strategy and marketing to focus more on iconic trench coats and scarves after the brand was bruised by product missteps, excessive price hikes, and a broader luxury downturn. And that's a look at your corporate headlines.
Well, good morning and thank you so much. We are joined.
United Health is under criminal probe for medical care fraud.
United Health Group is under a criminal investigation by the U.S. Justice Department for possible Medicare fraud. That's according to a Wall Street Journal report Wednesday, which cited people familiar with the matter. While the journal said it's unclear what the exact criminal allegations are, they say the investigation has been active since at least last summer, undertaken by the Healthcare Fraud Unit of the DOJ's Criminal Division. It would be the latest in a series of setbacks for United Health, one of the largest health insurers in the US. Last year, it's seen a cyber attack at its tech unit, the killing of the head of its insurance unit, and subsequent public backlash against the industry. And Wednesday's report comes a day after United Health Group's CEO Andrew Witty unexpectedly stepped down. The company also suspended its 2025 financial forecast due to rising medical costs. In February, the journal reported a civil fraud investigation into United Health's practices around Medicare. In the same month, U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley also launched an inquiry into United Health's practices in Medicare billing. At the time, the company had then said that it was unaware of any new probe. Medicare is the federal health insurance program in the U.S. for people aged 65 and older or with disabilities. And the report of a new investigation follows broader scrutiny into the Medicare Advantage program. Nearly half of the 65 million people covered by Medicare are enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans run by private insurers. The DOJ earlier this month had filed a lawsuit accusing three of the largest U.S. health insurers of paying hundreds of millions of dollars in kickbacks to brokers in exchange for steering patients into the insurer's Medicare Advantage plans. The insurers are paid a set rate for each patient, but can be paid more if patients have multiple health conditions. Wednesday's Wall Street Journal report of a new probe sent United Health shares plunging to a four-year low. The company and the DOJ did not immediately respond to Reuters' request for comments.
Welcome back. JSC listed specialist logistics real estate investment trust.
U.S.-China 90-day tariff pause kicks in.
Okay, more now on the trade tensions, and the companies in the US are rushing to get shipments from China as a 90-day pause in the trade war between the world's two largest economies has come into effect, an agreement Donald Trump has referred to as a total reset in relations. Laura Bicker has been to southern China, where shipments to ports in the US had all but come to a standstill.
The race is on. Factory workers in China are trying to make up for lost time and lost trade. This sofa company is keen to finally get shipments on the move in case Mr. Trump changes his mind about lowering tariffs.
Our factory stopped production because our main market is the United States. Once the tariffs exceeded 50%, we had already come to a standstill. 145% was just not possible.
Goods have been piling up here since April. Now, surprisingly, the two superpowers have managed to do a deal.
Many observers have focused on the question, who blinked first, Donald Trump or President Xi? Beijing believes its defiance brought the Americans to the table, its refusal to give in, but it has come at a cost.
US companies are scrambling to get their shipments out of Chinese ports, which could take weeks. And the lower import taxes will only last for 90 days. No one is sure what happens next. These air fryers were designed for the US market. They were in development until the tariffs hit.
It felt like my parents were getting a divorce. China and the US are the most important economic and cultural powers in the world. Their sudden separation would lead to a world that we cannot imagine. Tariffs as high as 145% would mean we have to say goodbye to one another.
At night, the workers who build kettles and toasters for US homes learn dance moves in the park. If talks with the US don't go well, they face an uncertain future. Beijing may feel like it's won this tariff war, but it's far from over. Laura Bicker, BBC News, Foshan.
Fashion designers are already shooting next year's collections, but given the...
Tariffs are still at 55%, but efficiency keeps us ahead, says China's top fridge exporter.
Tariffs have dropped from 145% to 10%. That gives us at least some certainty. Many U.S. clients are resuming orders, which is a positive sign. However, total duties on our refrigerators entering the U.S. still add up to 55%, which remains a serious burden. Fortunately, the U.S. only made up about 6% of our sales last year, and we expect 8% this year. So the impact on us is relatively limited.
Many Chinese manufacturers are shifting their supply chains outside of the country. Do you have plans on building factories overseas?
To manage export uncertainties, we're expanding our global production. We plan to grow our capacity in Southeast Asia. We're also forming strategic partnerships with existing factories in key markets, such as Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. We'll share our technology, production capabilities, and create local jobs. These efforts are boosting local economies and are very well received.
China has made significant breakthroughs in smart manufacturing. How do you see these tech upgrades help companies like yours maintain your competitive advantage in the global market?
China used to compete on low costs. Land, labor, utilities, that's no longer the case. Today, advances in AI, automation, and robotics have made China's manufacturing efficiency world-class. For large-scale production, that means lower costs. Our high-end products now rival or even surpass brands from Japan, Korea, Europe, and the U.S. in both tech and design. With that edge, we're steadily gaining ground in global markets.
Businesses say they are struggling to survive amid the Trump tariffs.
In the current trade climate, this is the first time in 30 years of business Deirdre Quinn is seriously doubting if she can keep her company for another year.
Are you confident you'll be around for Resort 2026?
No.
Quinn is co-founder and CEO of Lafayette 148, a luxury label that has become a fixture in the fashion industry, worn by the likes of Julia Roberts, Viola Davis, the former Speaker of the House, and the First Lady. It's a brand now struggling. Despite the rollback on Chinese tariffs, Lafayette 148 is straining under the tariffs still in place.
So what do you do? What is your strategy then going forward?
Well, at the moment, it's to speak out.
So far, Quinn has paid some $2.8 million in tariffs this year, paying 30%, while certainly better than the 145% that was previously in place, still means she needs to pay an additional $2.3 million over the next 90 days.
You know, we're in a tough position right now.
Tough because if she were to pass on the current total tariff cost to her customers, a blouse from her collection, currently costing about $600, would be more than $700. It's a shift the entire industry is feeling. The U.S. receives 97% of its clothing and shoes from other countries, primarily China and Vietnam. In Quinn's case, 95% of her products are made in China. Right now, she stays afloat by shipping only what has already sold, without passing the total cost on to her customers. Meanwhile, most of her inventory is still sitting in China.
I can't afford to have my entire cash flow go to the tariffs, and that's what's happening.
Independent jewelry designer Presley Oldham is doing what President Trump has been advocating for. His product is made in the United States.
They're a really beautiful color.
He still needs freshwater pearls, which come primarily from two places in the world, China or Japan. At a recent show, he says retailers from Canada and Mexico who wanted to avoid tariffs refused to buy because he's a U.S.-based designer.
How much revenue do you think you've lost so far?
Easily upwards of $40,000. As an entrepreneur, I'm really searching for this sort of ground to stand on right now, and I don't know what that looks like.
Repercussions already being felt on the sales floor at Lafayette 148's boutique in Soho.
Our clients are walking in and asking if we're okay.
What do you tell them?
You're looking for a ray of hope that this is all just a bad dream and it's going to go away.
The real worry is if the tariff nightmare doesn't go away in short order, Deirdre Quinn says her life's work and all she has built may soon be gone.
How long do you think, realistically, you can keep doing this?
No, I won't make it to Labor Day.
Won't make it to Labor Day. Thanks so much to Jason Carroll for that report. That, of course, is just a few months away. Paul Hickey and Peter Tuckman are out front. Paul.
Now, America's ports soon could face a surge from stockpiling.
Starting today, all cargo leaving China and heading for the U.S. will now carry a 30% tariff, which is a steep drop from that 145% tariffs that were in place for the past 6 weeks. The temporary lower tariffs are in effect for 90 days as the U.S. and China try to negotiate a new trade deal. The crippling high rates devastated America's ports, which saw a dramatic slowdown in cargo. They're now bracing for a surge from stockpiling. CNN's Vanessa Yurkevich is with us now. Tell us what to expect here.
Yeah, what a dramatic reversal that could happen in just a matter of weeks. For the past few weeks, we've been reporting that ports across the United States have been experiencing such a steep decline in cargo volume coming in because of that high 145% tariff on Chinese exports. Now, with this 30% tariff on Chinese exports, economists and analysts are expecting that retailers will take advantage of this 90-day window when the U.S. And China are negotiating to bring in in as much inventory as possible. You're talking about back-to-school shopping items and holiday items that many retailers put on pause because the tariffs were too high. One economist told me, this is Peter Bukvar, he said, you're going to see a rush of ordering over the next 90 days, the likes we've never seen before. You're going to see the cost of transportation skyrocket too in the coming weeks and months. Now, this potential surge, though, will not be seen until late June or early July because it takes between 3 to 4 weeks for goods to come from China to the West Coast and 4 to 6 weeks for goods from China to come to the East Coast. However, this does not wipe away what is happening this month at U.S. ports. Just take a look at the Port of Los Angeles reporting a 25% drop in cargo this month. Long Beach saying they saw a 35 to 40% drop in cargo last week. And the ports of Seattle and Tacoma say they're expecting an 8 to 15% drop in cargo versus what they see normally. Also, the Northwest Seaport Alliance, which represents Seattle and Tacoma, say that, yes, they are glad that imports may pick up again, but this chaotic nature of the on-again, off-again tariffs make it very difficult for the ports to staff accordingly. And, of course, for people who work at those ports to know exactly how much work they're getting and how much hours they're getting. Yet to be seen how big this surge is, but the ports, retailers, and ocean cargo brokers are expecting for there to be a boom in the coming weeks. Brianna.
And it's a wrap on today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. Do stay tuned for the Onkunana Dengue program with David Shamba and Bernadette Simon. Now for me and Dafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow for yet another episode as we close off this week for On the Radar News Bulletin. Goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day. If you're driving, ensure that you do drive safely. And if you're driving long distances, also do ensure that you park on the side so that you can get some rest and resume driving. Remember, it is better to arrive late than not at all.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Olum nangeshifa noahara kushivifa oma akuro yo kupitira muhorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enyamukuru olongaha. Ningikwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa konorahita tu natu, mbali oheta tu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.